Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Lost in Postulation. I am Neil Fitzpatrick and I am joined by a man who, contrary to expectations today, is here with no hat on what is normally a one-hat podcast. We're doing it remote, as you can probably hear, but I'm shocked to see that Nicola is not sporting his usual trademark hat. Do you want to comment on this controversial topic?
Yeah, I think I'm going to call it a strike for my part, because you are not pulling your weight on the One Hat Podcast side of things.
That is utterly fair. I think I've mentioned, I've addressed on the podcast before, I'm not a comfortable hat wearer. It's not a part of my everyday repertoire.
You also went as far as saying, if I remember, that the hat was interfering with your podcasting and, more importantly, postulation abilities.
Exactly. There's something about the waves, like the brain waves. I'm not going to get into, you know, conspiracy territory, tinfoil hat stuff, but I just think I just think it's, you just postulate so much better with unencumbered hair follicles.
I mean, that's beautiful. Would you then say you would postulate even better if you shaved your head?
That is something that we can only find out through the magic of scientific testing. I feel like that's one we have to take. That's a hit we have to take for the team. And by the way, I forgot to mention, I came back from Turkey before we recorded the last episode, but I forgot to mention to you, in the airport in Istanbul, it is so crazy. Like every fourth or fifth guy you see is wearing this, is bald or a shaved head with like, look, not to get too graphic for the listeners, but, you know, clearly very tender hair follicles in new places on their head, and these kind of weird headbands that they all wear. And there's just so many of them.
With the headband. Is that the headband to like cover the parts that kind of look burned on the forehead?
I would need to ask one of them, or maybe one of the listeners can chip in, but I think the headband is to be the point of contact with anything like your seat or something like that. It stops your head from the skin itself from touching anything else, really. So the headband is like the first point of contact. But like, it looks so sore and it looks like really uncomfortable. I hope it's not as uncomfortable as it looks. But I was just struck by how on point that was, that like, yes, everyone is doing it. Everyone is going to Turkey. Like there was so many people. Yeah. Just that one day when I was coming home, I can only imagine how many are flying in and out. Anyway, little side topic.
No, but we actually had a friend over recently who did it, who actually did it in Denmark, because now the costs are going down, so you don't necessarily need to do the Turkey one anymore. Yeah. And they came over shortly after my wife had given birth, and I was, you know, having a sidebar conversation with him, asking him how it was and stuff. And he was saying, you know, that it was actually quite painful. My wife stepped in at one point because she had just given birth, so she's like, well, it couldn't have been that painful.
Yeah, easy now. Yeah.
But it did not look pleasant for the first stretch of time. Now he went through the stage, I think, where it has to kind of come off again.
Another round of moving, or like what happens?
No, you don't have to go back in. It just kind of like initial follicles don't last, so they fall off, and you come back with the kind of full new line afterwards. So it actually takes longer than you think. But hey, you know what? Again, you know, for the sake of postulation, we only do primary research on this podcast, so we're not going to take their word for it. It's going to have to be one of us.
It is going to, and we're going to have to flip a coin, and I don't want to be the loser of that one. Let's see. But one for another day. Perhaps it is time, Nicola, I think, to get into our mundane postulation. But before we do, I think it's always good to give the listeners a quick reminder of where they can find us on the cyberspace interwebs. First and foremost, we like to meet up with you on... Do we say Instagram is our favorite these days? I actually don't know, which is our forerunning social media platform.
You know, I would say Instagram for postulations. That's at Lost in Postulation on Instagram. And I would say for business inquiries, of which there are more and more, Lost in Postulation at gmail.com. That's gmail.com.
The famous web service. Indeed, you'll find us on X for the time being. Every single episode, we get closer to saying that we're done, but we're not quite there yet. Elon, for those keeping up, has most recently been on a New York Times panel where he told advertisers exactly where to go and spent an hour and a half.
He
lost it. Did you watch that interview, by the way? It was just stunning.
I saw clips of it, not the whole thing, because, you know, you can only take so much Elon
Yeah, it's pretty special. It hits different long form. I highly recommend just watching the whole thing. He's a maniac. But anyway, you'll also find us on X. That's at InPostulation on X, I believe. And you may even find us on YouTube, where some of our reels have been reaching out into the wider world, which is great to see. So you'll find us, the Lost in Postulation podcast, on YouTube.
And since we're not an ageist podcast, Neil, to pay our respects, you can also find us, should you be so inclined, on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Grandparents and parents are welcome to find us there. We are always happy to engage with our followers of all ages. Facebook is not so busy these days, I know. But still, it's important. Mm-hmm. It's important to cover our bases here.
Absolutely. Our bases. And again, lovely, you know, for someone that detests baseball so much, the amount of baseball references you use, my friend, is insane.
Bases loaded, top of the ninth. Let's get into a mundane postulation. We are here to talk about something that happened to me just over the past weekend, Nicola, that I wanted to hear your thoughts on. Bit of a head scratcher. And actually, I still don't know where I stand on this. I was at a college alumni meetup event here in Copenhagen. So there is the Trinity College Alumni Association has a Danish branch, I believe it is. And I mean, the vast majority are based in Copenhagen. And once a year or thereabouts, we do a little Christmas meetup or something like that. Not a huge turnout this year. Let's not delve on that or dwell on that too much. The point, though, was more, we were doing a few little icebreakers and games and quizzes and stuff like that. And one of the games that was in play was a Would You Rather game, where you draw a card and then you read it out to the group and everyone chips in on what they would rather. And a lot of great ripe for postulation Would You Rathers in there. But there was one that really got the group going that even since then I've been reflecting on a little bit. I wanted to hear your take on it. So it is this. Would you rather have one wish now, today, or three wishes 5 years from now? And our standard wishing rules apply. So you're not allowed to wish for more wishes. You're not allowed to wish for anything unethical, let's say. And then let's hear your take on this. And then I have one follow-up to this.
I imagine this is with the assumption that whatever I wish for is granted.
Yes.
Okay. So one wish today or three wishes in 5 years, you said?
The delayed gratification. Yeah. What would it be?
This is that classic experiment where they put out a cookie in front of like a five-year-old, right? And they say, hey, if you resist 1 minute, you'll get a second cookie. You'll get to keep both, right? Mm-hmm. And then they film them and they're all going crazy, like trying not to look at the cookie, etc.
Exactly.
I mean, could you wish with your one wish now, for the sake of postulation, could you wish to have even more than three wishes in 5 years?
I just said, rule number one, you weren't listening, Nicola, to the rules.
No, I'm sorry.
You cannot wish for more wishes. This is like prime Aladdin stuff here, okay? The genie made it very clear. No wishing for more wishes.
I think I would go for the delayed gratification. You know, I'm I'm a long-term guy. I don't consider myself too old at the moment. And that would give me time to really plan accordingly to what those three wishes could be then and really just maximize my returns. That's what I'm inclined to do at the moment. I don't really have any urgent wishes, so then I would rather in 5 years.
Interesting. Yeah, this was kind of the consensus at the table, although it raised a kind of a key point of then how safe do you play things? Because ultimately, like every time you get in a car, every time you get on a plane, you are risking that 0.0000, you know, chance of things going, let's say, wrong. And then then it's all for naught. You'll have lost all your wishes if you sadly pass away between now and 5 years from now. So would you adapt your lifestyle? Would you be playing things a bit safer?
Yeah, this is a very Keynesian postulation now, right? Because he would say in the long run, we're all dead. So, you know, take it now, do it now. Would I adapt my lifestyle now that you've said so? Yeah, from the extreme things, which I don't think I'm doing anyways, you know, like skydiving, bungee jumping, all these types of things. But that's it. I don't think I wouldn't get in a car or go on a bicycle or something. But I think what you're alluding to here is the cost of delayed gratification, right?
Indeed.
now you have so much to look forward to potentially in 5 years that you might start to see everything as a passing threat. And actually, speaking from personal experience, and now I'm backtracking on what I just said, you can have life events and all of a sudden start to see threats everywhere. I saw it without even noticing the moment we had our son, all of a sudden how protective I start getting in the streets of people cutting me off with the stroller, you know, people coming a bit too close with a cigarette or whatever. So actually, if I would choose the delayed gratification, it would probably, human nature would set in, it would get into my head, and I might start living like a hermit for the next 5 years.
Exactly. That, I think, is a big risk. And then there is this other more philosophical topic, right, which we briefly touched on, and I think we quickly moved on before the night got too introspective. But there's this question of, is a wish something that actually is going to improve your life or not? You know what I mean? Because where I'm coming from with this is, like, I do believe that we've evolved and we've gotten this far because we have this inherent drive to, like, go after stuff, you know? We're constantly dissatisfied. We're constantly moving towards something. And I do often, you see it often with lottery winners, right? Where they win the lottery, they get the thing that they've been wanting to get, and they blow it all on God knows what, and then they're back at square one.
Right.
Or it doesn't make them any happier or whatever. So I suppose my point is a wish kind of a curse in a sense that, say you wish for unlimited money, right? You will lose all motivation to ever, like, try to do stuff then, at least to try to earn money, because that box is now ticked for the rest of your life.
Neil, and to me, the free market capitalist joining us again.
Indeed. Guys, I'm becoming more and more right-wing with each passing episode. But no, I think my key postulation here is just, like, we always talk about wishes. Oh, if I had one wish, I've had this, I could do that. But actually, like, nobody wins there. Like, you get something for free, unearned, without trying, without growing or learning anything. So you end up not enjoying the thing anyway. It's like, I don't know. I think sometimes the last thing you need is a wish.
Yes, wishes could make things boring, right? On the other hand, they could just help you pass a hurdle and then you're on to the next thing, which then would go to your point of probably not being happy with it. You know, what I'm really wondering is, was anybody actually at this college reunion, or were you just discussing this in the mirror?
Let's say there was a non-zero number of attendees, and it was less than 10, and it was more than 0 and 1.
Okay. Okay.
It was decent. Well, it was a handful. Okay. And a really great group of people, and had a great time reminiscing on our college days, etc. But
take then was first delayed gratification, and then actually screw wishes altogether?
Yeah, and the only other reflection that was a bit kind of stray here was, people were saying, if you had unlimited money, what is it actually that would change in your life, you know? Because you still have, like, the same amount of time as you have now. It's just, okay, you might not work, so what are you going to do with all that time? But it's like, I don't know maybe I'm reaching a different stage of my headspace or something, but I'm just like, I don't know what I would do even different. I might take a few cool holidays, but, like, ultimately, that's not going to move things much for me. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
I think when you look at the money one, it's all relative. My impression is that your lifestyle quickly adapts, whether you like it or not, to the amount of money you have, right? And so that becomes super relative. So all of a sudden, what seems like a crazy amount of money starts to probably be just enough to cover your expenses and your now much more expensive lifestyle. Leading to your point that, you know, as the great Biggie Smalls once said, more money, more problems.
Cash rules everything around me. It is
cream.
It is definitely true to say lifestyle creep is a thing, and I see it all the time everywhere, including in myself. And I think it comes back to human nature that we've only made it this far because of our constant dissatisfaction with what we currently have and our constant yearning for something more just around the corner. And that's what makes us great and human, but it also means that we will always be dissatisfied with the amount of money or resources or whatever that we have. But maybe a bigger topic for another postulation, but wanted to get the ball rolling, at least with your take on that mundane topic.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Very a Ronald Reagan of you.
Me and Ronnie, we have a lot in common.
Marty, who's the president in 1984?
Reagan, the actor.
The actor?
Need to watch it again. Need to watch it again because I don't, you know, when you, it's been so long since you watched something that you're no longer confident in your impression of that thing. That's where I'm at now.
Well, you're also renowned for making impressions of things you've never even seen. So wouldn't put it past you.
I do fall victim to that awful temptation of just taking a punt sometimes. And sometimes it goes well, sometimes it doesn't. But that is sadly the life of a postulator like me. You do take these risks sometimes. Sometimes it doesn't pay off.
You've got to. And I think we're going to take a few risks on the next postulation right after the break, listeners.
But do you have one in particular that you want to throw out?
The classic one is like, not that it's bad actually, but just that it had zero impact on us, which was the artist, really. That the artist...
I knew you were going to go.
Yeah,
2011.
That's unfortunate because and Moonlight, speaking like the artist, Moonlight again is one of those films that who's talking about Moonlight really? Like, has anyone excitedly told you, oh, do you know what you have to watch? You know, like,
exactly.
Never. Were it not for Crash, just what happened? Like, what?
Unbelievable.
Is there, did the world ever get to the bottom of, like, what happened? How did this happen? And to punch a little bit my new favorite punching bag, The Fabelmans is exactly that type of movie where I honestly, it winds me up. I'm getting annoyed just talking about it.
That.
The frickin' Fabelmans, where every scene you're like, you can just see Spielberg in his head being like, oh, I'm so getting an Oscar for this. Like, it's all just like pure, isn't this so emotional? Isn't this so moving, guys? Aren't you feeling really sad now? Oh, isn't it sad how I got bullied in school? Like,
Steven.
I mean, I don't feel any sympathy for Steven. He's doing fine, okay? Like, I'm sure he did have a difficult childhood. Yeah, it's sad if your parents divorced, but like, okay, don't make a movie about it and then expect an Oscar for it, because no, it is a terrible movie. Sorry, I hated it. But didn't mean to jump on the Fabelmans too hard there, but the point was more that... I'm surprised.
You really didn't like Argo. I
hated
huh?
it for the same reason I hate The Fabelmans. Just it's like pure, like, let's go America, woohoo, firing my AK into the air, you know, like just or I suppose it should be AR but rather than an AK, but yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, I do know what you mean, because I was in Cincinnati, Ohio when I went to see Argo.
Mm.
And at the end of the film, everyone stood up and clapped.
0% surprised by that.
The same thing happened for Top Gun Maverick.
I'm sure it did. You can see there's a trend coming out here. And I'm not anti-American, by the way. I love the country, loved its culture even. But I just don't particularly like this particularly cynical approach to filmmaking, which is like basically propaganda. And if we're going to talk about propaganda, when we talk about, say, China or Russia, I think we should equally talk about propaganda about the US. Because films like Top Gun are propaganda, basically. They are, like... If you're going to tie them by the same brush, you know,
recruitment
so like,
for the Navy after the original Top Gun skyrocketed. Like,
exactly,
there's numbers on it.
And if we're okay with that, then so is Argo, right? That, like, Argo is a savior piece for America, where it paints the Americans in a much more favorable light than I think was truly the case, and that Canada had an equally important role to play in that operation in Iran. But apparently that's not how the film turns out. And it's anyway, not to get too much into Argo, that wasn't the point of this exercise.
No.
But I think the what is the point here is Django of that list is the one that clearly stands the test of time and has remained way more influential than Zero Dark Thirty, than Argo, than any of the others from that. Even Silver Linings Playbook, I think, kind of fell off the face of the earth a little bit.
Welcome back, listeners. You thought it was over. Neil wished it was over, but it's not. The sandwich / hot dog wars continue, Neil.
I'm delighted to hear that, honestly. I think you can never have too much hot dogs. You can never have too much hot dog discussion. And let's absolutely bring it on.
Look, I think as the serious media journalistic, if you will, outlet that we are, like any serious media outlet, we need to present a nuanced perspective. We need to present both sides of a story, especially in such a contentious debate when we're discussing whether a hot dog is a sandwich or not. Now, last week, listeners, you heard from Jim Winship, the CEO, the managing director of the British Sandwich Association. And he, I would say, to an extent, put out a sort of olive branch to the hot dog community, where he said that, yes, hot dogs within their current definitions do not fall in sandwich territory, but he would be willing if I opened a hot dog stand in central London to represent me.
As did he clarify that he meant as food to go, or that he would embrace you into the sandwich fold specifically?
He said as food to go.
Okay, well, that was something at least. It wasn't right? It wasn't a full invitation into the sandwich verse, but it was, you know, at least an olive branch, as you say.
Right. And it's a start to, like with any sort of peace discussions, right? Conflict resolution. Yeah, yeah. We've covered Parmesan diplomacy on this podcast before. I think it's become our duty, Neil, to bring peace to this war.
Absolutely. Also, this is in line with negotiation training generally. Rule one of negotiating, at least one of the early rules, is to open appropriately extreme. Open extreme mm-hmm. enough not to insult your counterpart, but still far enough away from your walkaway point that you have some room to move. And that is what Jim has done here by opening the door just a crack.
So what we did was we crossed the Atlantic. We went deep into hot dog territory and we found, Neil, the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council in the United States of America. Where else?
Not too shabby.
Yeah. Now, heading up that organization is Eric Mittenhall. We've already reached out to Eric and his people. Eric is currently traveling, but we will be interviewing him on the podcast over the coming weeks. He was very eager to come on. He actually said, "Can it wait?" To which we replied, "Eric, of course it can wait. We're negotiating peace here, man."
It's like, the best part of it is like, I love that he asked, "Can it wait?" As in, maybe it can't. Like, is it that super urgent that like we really have to go? Yes, it can wait. But then again, the sooner the better, you know? That's my take on it.
Absolutely. So, listeners, we wanted to provide you with a bit of background. You know, Eric couldn't join us yet this week, but delving into their website, fact-checking, doing our research, actually one of their core issues, Neil, one of their core points is a hot dog a sandwich? And they've provided a ton of literature on this, going as far as to, you know, I'm gonna read you something here. The National Hot Dog and Sausage Council announces official policy on hot dog as a sandwich controversy. This is from 2015. Now, and I quote, "Limiting the hot dog's significance by saying it's just a sandwich is like calling the Dalai Lama just a guy."
Oh, okay.
Initial thought there?
Oh, okay. Hold on. So the implication behind this is that being just a sandwich is a bad thing. But I think being a sandwich is a great thing. Like, that the hot dog should be honored to be counted in that number, you know? I'm not saying it's just a sandwich. I'm saying it gets to be a sandwich. So already don't agree with the premise here, but and I'm not going to get started on the Dalai Lama part. I feel that is a metaphor that is somewhat of a stretch, maybe, but or a false equivocation, to use the correct term. But I will leave some space here to be proven wrong. So let's see.
I'm going to try to frame this in a way that maybe you might sympathize with the hot dogs, right? The premise here, I think, is that this is a bit of a secessionist rebel movement by the hot dogs from their former state of the sandwich. They do not want to be called just a part of the kingdom any longer. They want to be their own sovereign state.
Yeah, I think I see where you're coming from. I see what angle you've decided to take here as well. So I'm receptive. Please continue.
Okay. They continue and they say, "Perhaps at one time its importance could be limited by forcing it into a larger sandwich category. No disrespect to Rubens and others.
What's a Reuben?"
But that time has passed. I believe Reuben's from the Reuben sandwich.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but I don't think it's Reuben the artist. But then they finish like this. "We therefore choose to take a cue from a great performer and declare our namesake be a hot dog formerly known as a sandwich." Paying homage, of course, their listeners to the great Prince from Minnesota.
Formerly known as. What a guy. R.I.P. as well. But what I can maybe reflect already here is just this, I buy what you're saying. I get the recessionist vibes. I like how they're a rebellious offshoot of the sandwich game. But I don't think they should lose sight of their roots either, because still a hot dog is fundamentally a piece of meat between two pieces of bread that you can eat without getting your hands dirty. And I feel we've talked with Jim about how there's a great deal of innovation in the sandwich game and how the sandwich continues to adapt to the needs of the consumer. And I would hate to think that the hot dog, which, by the way, Jim mentioned has lost its way a little bit over the last number of years. Correct. I would hate to think that the hot dog of today gets stuck in the mud and refuses to innovate because it fails to see itself as an innovating sandwich rather just a set thing, you know?
The sense I'm getting here, because underneath they have a dozen reasons why the terms hot dog and sandwich are not interchangeable, which reads very much like a 12 commandments of the hot dog. I think the hot dogs see themselves a bit as the star player on the team. And they're essentially demanding a trade. I mean, part of these commandments are, does ESPN broadcast sandwich eating contests? Another one is, Babe Ruth wasn't sent to the hospital and rumored to be dead because he ate too many sandwiches. You know, if you won the lottery, would you say sandwich? No, you'd say hot dog.
I have to commend the, you know, the creativity here, because they needed 12, and like obviously some of these 12 are perhaps more well-grounded than others, but still I appreciate the creativity.
And it doesn't end there. I think they're masters of building their credibility, the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council. Let's not forget the sausages, Neil.
Wanted to check in on that one, actually, because if you were to travel to somewhere, say, oh, I don't know, Ireland, right? Mm-hmm. You would find that sausages make up the vast, vast majority of the pork product consumption in the country, and hot dogs is like an afterthought, right? And sausages are great. I mean, especially in Ireland, you can get some absolute, not to pardon the pun, but bangers in terms of sausages.
Are you a breakfast sausage guy?
Yeah, in Ireland, yes. So anytime I travel, and in the UK, if I ever travel for work and I'm in a hotel that serves a full Irish or a full English breakfast, I will absolutely be stocking up on the hotel sausages and the hotel rashers. But that's another story.
Are rashers hash browns or what?
No, rashers are bacon, sir. You're badly in need of an education when next time you go to the UK or Ireland. Just ask for a full Irish or a full English. You won't get it here, or if you do get one here, it won't be as good. It'll be some kind of cheap imitation. But a full Irish breakfast, you can't go wrong. It is a fantastically heavy way to start your day.
Well, indeed. And fun fact, actually, the Danes would claim that the bacon you're having in that full Irish is actually coming from pigs in Denmark.
And they'd be wrong, because I believe the Irish pork industry is also quite substantial. I know the Danish pork industry is pretty huge, but I actually think the full Irish breakfast is one of those things that's almost entirely consisting of animals born and raised in Ireland in many cases. But yeah.
Look, if our listeners were playing Neil Fitzpatrick bingo at the moment, they will just have unlocked the square Neil of the Patriot.
Always. I mean, what kind of Irish person would I be if I didn't try and shoehorn it into every single episode saying how great it is?
Understandable. But now back to, you know, our friends at the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council. I don't know why I keep emphasizing sausage, because I'm really not going to go into any more depth on sausages, but, you know, out of respect.
Fair. Sure.
They have an entire page dedicated to famous people weighing in on the heated hot dog sandwich debate. First quote they lead with is from a little guy you might know as Matty Ice, Matt Damon. He says, I've never considered a hot dog a sandwich because a hot dog is a hot dog. I mean, technically, it comes between two pieces of bread or one folded into two, so I guess you can classify it as a sandwich. Then what would you call it, a hot dog sandwich? That's like a hat on a hat, so let's just keep it as a hot dog. Matt Damon, ladies and gentlemen, would you grant him credibility status on this debate or not?
That's like a train wreck of a quote, I'm sorry to say. There's a YouTube clip out there of a football team. It happens to be a female football team, but that's not the point here, where one player scores 3 own goals in the space of 2 minutes. And on the first one, you have sympathy. And the second one, you're like, ah, come on. And the third one, you're just like, okay, get off the pitch. Like, seriously. You haven't seen that one? I'll send it to you after.
I have. It's phenomenal.
Phenomenal. It's phenomenal to watch. It's one of those, like, just moments in history that will just never be beaten. But I feel Matt has done likewise here, in that he proceeds to set down a clear statement, and then goes against that statement instantly, and then goes against that statement again. So I think it's a great quote. I'm glad Matt has weighed in on it. I just think that it's a bit of an own goal times three.
So Matt Damon not helping the cause. We're going to move on to David Schwimmer. David Schwimmer, who you may remember as Ross from Friends. And
big fan
Ross
of David.
Big fan of David, also a big fan of Ross.
Bigger fan of David due to his work on Band of Brothers, but still a fan of Ross also. Good character.
Correct. Band of Brothers, that's true. What was his character in that early episodes?
Sure. What was his name? It's like Schwobel or something like that. He had like this kind of
Major Schwobel.
Corporal. Schwobel. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sobel. Sobel.
Sobel. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Great character.
Exactly. So now picture him as Schwobel in Band of Brothers. And he says, I would say no because the bread is joined. I define a sandwich as two pieces of bread with stuff between it. Now here, I think, thanks to Mr. Schwimmer, we start to get towards something more concrete.
Yeah, but
the
even
bread
that,
around a hot dog is joined, Neil.
Yeah, but like, I could also unjoin it for him. Would that then be a sandwich? Like, is he saying that it's the linking of the bread that makes it not a sandwich? Because like, that's nonsense. Because I can make a sandwich.
That's what he's focusing on. That's his niche.
Yeah, but couldn't I, if I have a piece of bread, right? Imagine a thick piece of bread here, and then I cut it in half most of the way, but not all the way. And it develops a hinge then as a result. And then I fill it with the usual sandwich condiments and contents. I could eat that as a sandwich, right? Are you telling me, David Schwimmer, that that's not a sandwich because it has a hinge on the bread? Come on. Let's get real. Let's get real here.
All right. David Schwimmer out as well. So we're going to come down here, honestly, to one of your favorite people, and that's Jimmy Kimmel. Not Fallon, Kimmel, okay?
Yeah. Kimmel I like more than Fallon, that's for sure.
Okay, well, doesn't say much that you like anybody more than Jimmy Fallon, but...
True.
Here we are, Jimmy Kimmel. By my definition, a hot dog is a hot dog. It's its own thing with its own specialized bun. If you went into a restaurant and ordered a meat tube sandwich, would that make sense? No! They'd probably call the cops on you. I don't care what anyone says, a hot dog is not a sandwich. And if hot dogs are sandwiches, then cereal is soup. Chew on that one for a while.
Interesting. Is cereal soup? Can we do a quick sidebar?
A milk soup. Where the Cheerios are used as croutons, I guess, would be the analogy.
It's a lot of croutons. I would maybe argue that a soup has like more than milk as an ingredient, but yeah.
Well, according to Kimmel, anything in a bowl would be a soup then, I guess.
I think he's being deliberately obtuse here. He's overly simplifying the argument to try and make his point. I think in general, it feels like all of these celebrities are in the pocket of Big Hot Dog. And they've been paid probably extortionate sums of money to come out in favor of Big Hot Dog being a separate thing to Big Sandwich.
Okay, I will give you a final one from what we could call as close to a subject matter expert as there can be, excluding champions of the hot dog eating contest, which we'll get into because obviously they're way too biased. The late, yeah, great Anthony Bourdain.
Uh-oh.
The late, great Anthony Bourdain, and I quote, "The bread is a delivery system, a ballistic delivery system. It is not a classic sandwich, in my view. If you were to walk into any vendor of fine hot dogs and ask for a hot dog sandwich, they would probably report you to the FBI. Forget the cops. He goes all the way to the FBI, Anthony Bourdain.
I mean, this is the one I like the most so far. Number one, because I have deep respect for anything that Anthony has said at any point in time. But also because I like the idea that it's something more like a ballistic delivery system, which, okay, it's very graphic, or it's at least it creates a unique mental image of how people consume hot dogs. Certainly in the hot dog eating competitions, that's basically how they eat them. They dip them in the water and then they just absolutely forcefully swallow the thing. But yeah, you can tell I'm not overly, you know, I haven't been swung completely around on this one, but I like that he's approaching it from a creative angle. How he's saying that, you know, it's more to do with the bread serves as like a projectile delivery system. I like that.
Well, thank you to the late, great Anthony Bourdain. Let's move on, Neil, to hot dog etiquette, because the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council provides us, of course, with a very detailed brochure with rules. I wanted to run these by you, see what you agree with, what you don't.
Okay.
So hot dog etiquette, number one, and it's a don't. Don't put hot dog toppings between the hot dog and the bun. Always dress the dog, not the bun. Condiments should be applied in the following order. Wet condiments like mustard and chili are applied first, followed by chunky condiments like relish, onions, and sauerkraut, followed by shredded cheese, followed by spices like celery, salt, or pepper. How do you feel about that?
Broadly in agreement, actually. And that is actually one place where I do, that where you do disagree with the sandwich, because with a sandwich, at least for me, and tell me if I'm totally off base here. Hey, another baseball reference. I do believe you butter the bread and add, you know, whatever spread
right
before you go on to add the other ingredients. Whereas, yes, with a hot dog, I would go bread, dog, and then everything else. Because you kind of need the ketchup to sit along the dog itself. You don't want it on the bread necessarily.
Right.
That's a good point. Actually, I would agree with that so far.
Yeah, so that helps us. And then the next one is a do. Eat hot dogs on buns with your hands. Utensils should not touch hot dogs on buns.
I think that's a strong agree as well. What's your thought, though, on, you know, here in some of those Pulsevogner, those hot
sausage
dog wagons.
Sausage bands,
yeah. Yeah, one of the things they sell you is a piece of bread and a sausage, like two different things on a little paper plate. And you kind of have to figure that out yourself, you know? Do you go for those? No, never.
Lazy and disrespectful. If I want a hot dog, you know, I want it packaged up. So yeah, lazy and disrespectful, I think. I do not go for those.
Insulting. Yeah, I would never. Yeah. I just think it's crazy. I often see people buy them and I'm like, you were so close to just buying a hot dog, but you've deviated at the last second here.
Right.
But okay, so we agree so far. Also, it's, two for two so far.
So number three, and there's five of these.
Okay.
Don't take more than 5 bites to finish a hot dog. For foot-long Wiener, 7 bites are acceptable.
This one I feel is gatekeeping of the highest order and not very inclusive for the smaller mouthed consumers of hot dogs. So that one I would strike from the record instantly.
I think that's one we're going to have to take up with Eric, because I'm with you on that. Number four, do lick away condiments remaining on the fingers after eating a hot dog instead of washing. This must have been made pre-coronavirus, I imagine.
I like that also, I have to say. It's like you've already committed to eating this thing with your hands, right?
Yeah.
It's going to get messy.
Mm.
Same as anything else that you... It's like your fingers are going to get some on it. What are you really going to walk to the kitchen or the sink with your dirty hands, having just eaten, by the way, from them like 10 seconds ago, and suddenly they're not okay to eat off anymore? I think it's like in for a penny, in for a pound. You've already committed to it. Do it.
Wow. You didn't strike me as a big finger licker.
Oh, no, totally. Once I'm in, like if I've accepted that that's happening, e.g. go to Mackie D's, you know, get yourself a nice Big Mac meal. Then if there's something left on the fingers, I'm not going to just get a napkin and go, oh, well, that's lost food. No.
Okay.
It's happening. I'm eating it all. 100%. I probably have a very robust immune system for the same reason. So I probably consume all manner of bacteria on a daily basis. But I think it's one of my strengths. Yura often gives out to me about this, actually, that if we're walking around, you know, out and about, either in a new place, new city or whatever, I have this kind of weird, it's totally subconscious thing to touch things. I'm just kind of like, what's this?
You know, in the street.
Yeah. Like around, out and about. And constantly she's like, can you please stop touching everything inside? Because you don't know where it's been. And maybe that's true, but I feel like my immune system surely has benefited from this over the years.
Well, maybe that's something we could take up with Eric, is whether they have any scientific evidence that hot dog eaters have stronger immune systems than non-hot dog eaters.
I think it's a given. Like, I don't need to do this study. I can tell you for sure. Anyone who does eat food with their hands for sure has built up a better immune system than someone who has never eaten anything with their hands. I think that's probably safe to say.
You know, Spotify can flag us for misinformation nowadays.
Bring it on, Spotify. If that's if this is what's going to cause it, then it was going to happen anyway.
Okay, the final rule of etiquette for eating hot dogs. Don't use ketchup on your hot dog after the age of 18. Mustard, relish, onions, cheese, and chili are acceptable.
Insulting. Ignorant and insulting. And again, exclusionary. Too much gatekeeping here. This is like, let people have things that they like, you know? It just comes down to who does this benefit when you say this, you know? Oh, don't have this. Don't have ketchup because you're an adult. Since when is ketchup a kid's thing, by the way? I know kids like it, but come on, everyone loves ketchup.
I don't love ketchup, but I also didn't as a kid, so I mean, that's not something to go by. Notice, though, in this brochure, in these rules, what's missing, because in America, that's a big no-no, is mayonnaise, Neil.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm a big mayonnaise hot dog guy, though, as well. Like, mustard and ketchup is the way for me. That's like the combo.
Mustard and ketchup together? So like a yellow mustard, like a French's with...
Yeah.
With ketchup.
You do a little, you can even do a little wavy pattern. You know, you do one up, down, up, down, up, down, and then the other one you go down, up, down, up, down, up. You've got yourself a little double helix.
I mean, that's impressive. And I think almost as impressive as this brochure we received from the association, which then has a ton of other fun facts. But I wanted to park that there. We'll get into that with Eric. What I wanted to discuss with you now, Neil, how familiar are you with Nathan's hot dog eating contest, the international hot dog eating championships that occur every year on Coney Island?
Wow, I wasn't familiar enough to know that there was one big one. I've seen content of hot dog eating competitions, which, being very honest, is not the most nice thing to watch. It is a little bit stomach turning to see people go to town on those hot dogs. But I have to respect the athleticism, you know? It's a sport, they train for it, like anything else. ESPN broadcasts this, as we know, so yeah. Utmost respect, not something I'll be watching soon.
So you have 10 minutes to eat as many hot dogs as you can, right? You're leveraging the dipping in water, you're trying to expand your stomach and everything. How many do you think Joey Chestnut, who I think at the moment holds the record, ate in his record-setting year of 2021?
And this is the world record currently?
Yeah. For the men's, yeah.
So. And he's going full dip. He's dipping as he goes, right?
Yeah.
So then I guess with a full dip, you can do a hot dog in 2 bites probably, if you're a beast at it, you know? Mm. And that 2 bites probably takes 1, 2, probably about 5 seconds. And then let's say there's like a 5 second swallow time, 15 seconds a dog, and I'm being generous and I'm just hoping to get somewhere in the ballpark. So let's say you're getting 2 every 30 seconds and you're getting 4 a minute. So he's done about 40. Is that ballpark?
76.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So that's that, like when you work it out on a per second basis, that's when it gets even more impressive as well. It's like,
right.
Just outrageous.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's like more than one every 10 seconds. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And Miki Sudo, who is the women's record holder, did 48 and a half.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a hobby like any others. I mean, they would make fun of us being podcasters just the same as we'll make fun of them. So yeah, live and let live, I say.
Yeah. And in 2022... here is a note from that year's competition. Miki Sudo returns from her pregnancy to reclaim her title. After being shoved from the table, Joey Chestnut puts a protester who ran onto the stage during the event in a chokehold. Jeffrey Esper finished second, James Webb finished third.
Hopefully not the same James Webb of recent controversy from NASA in the 60s. But no, it's not. Different guy altogether. I would like, just the morbid curiosity now takes over, I would kind of like to see some of this drama. It sounds like a very dramatic event in many ways. But I guess we'll have to go add it to the list. After we go to the Sammies, we're going to have to go to the Coney Island hot dog eating contest.
Right. I think they could be open to it. After we get in with Eric here, I mean, I'm sure he has passes to go. I would be surprised if he didn't.
I think flights are going to be the big blocker there for us. But let's see if the LIP budget can stretch to it.
Exactly. And then How familiar are you with the man that used to be the GOAT, Kobayashi?
Cool name. I am not familiar with Kobayashi's work.
So just so we know, Kobayashi actually, when you look up pictures of this guy, he is thin and ripped.
Interesting.
Yeah. And he claims that he expands his stomach for a competition by eating larger and larger amounts of food, and then exercises to ensure that fat will not impede expansion of his stomach during a competition. So I think what we think as onlookers is, well, the bigger you are, the more hot dogs you can eat. But in fact, a lot of it is about how your core and abdominal muscles can expand. So it's actually more about the strength in that area than the size of that area when sitting down.
I just feel so uncomfortable already thinking about it. And I recently, I think a couple of weeks ago, had an all-you-can-eat kind of meal where I, you know, helped myself to a lot of food. And even then, I was absolutely just stuffed, like uncomfortably full. And it wasn't pleasant. I wouldn't do this as a competition. I was like, no, this is not good. It's not a nice feeling. So no, I'm out. I know you're gonna try and tag me in here, maybe enter the competition or something. But no, I'm gonna sit this one out.
All right. But we will try to be there, listeners. Anybody over in Brooklyn on Coney Island, you know, let us know. Scope out the venue for us. Find out where our podcasting booth could go. And we'll get into the negotiations with Eric and ESPN for exclusivity rights.
I think that was what I was going to flag as a potential risk here, is that ESPN, you know, while there may be many things, they do have a slightly larger following than us. So I think when it comes to, you know, what we each bring to the table, they may have us beaten there on viewership or listenership, as the case may be. However, I'm not giving up. I'm not going down without a fight. I'm merely flagging that it's quite likely they will maintain the rights to the event for now. But let's see.
And listeners, we will not go down without a fight on this episode either, because we have one more quick segment coming for you right after the break. Listeners, welcome back. And loyal listeners, you'll remember a segment which we've gone to many times since the summer, which is one-star Google reviews, where we take the most mundane of establishments and we go through their worst Google reviews and analyze whether they're fair or not. We're taking this to the next level now, and we've decided, Neil, to check in on an old pal. I think one of the first ones we ever did, which is a Texaco petrol station, gas station, right outside of Cardiff in Wales, whose average score is a 3.7 on Google reviews. Mind you, that went up by 0.1 since the last time we checked in on them in September.
And you can't read too much into that, because we know that fake reviews are rife these days and people are doing all sorts to try and pump up their Google review score. But the reviews individually speak for themselves. If you sort these reviews by lowest, you start to see just what a kind of a place they are. Now, when we discussed doing this, I was a little bit pessimistic as to how it would go, mainly because one of the biggest issues with this place, as you'll see from the reviews, is or customer service, right? So if they receive a telephone call from the likes of us and they pick it up, I think there's a high chance that they will hang up or tell us where exactly to go within the first 15 to 20 seconds, if that.
15 to 20? I mean, yeah, if we make it that far, that's huge.
I think they'll spend at least 10 seconds making sure they've got the situation right. And they're like, oh, you're calling about, okay, goodbye. Now, that is perhaps pessimistic, but that is what I think. There is also the off chance, like last time when I tried to call the prize-winning sandwich makers, that they may just be finished up for the day by now. It's 5:30 in the UK. I don't know if they will still be there to pick it up, but that is something that we need to find out.
Right. I mean, the gas station itself is open 24 hours a day. So we have to see if, you know, wherever we're calling on the inside is as well. But it's a great test to see if the information they're providing Google with is trustworthy or not.
Do you think people call gas stations much, actually? Like, what would a consumer be calling about, really? That I don't know.
Whether they provide something or other or not, you know, whether there's a car wash attached potentially or I don't know.
Okay. It just feels very like old worldy that they would have a phone that rings and someone picks it up and goes, hello, it's Texaco, you know, like,
well, it is Wales.
Looks, Maybe you know, stranger things have happened. Let's find out.
Now, strategy real quick. Should I lead with a legitimate inquiry and then build to, do you know your Google reviews?
I would even say, if you wanted to, you could make this a whole legit story where you say, look, I'm going to be driving through the country soon, and I was looking to somewhere to refuel, and I saw your place, but I'm actually just a bit worried. The reviews for your place are a little bit low, actually. Can you confirm, or like, you know, have I got it wrong, or should I still come by? You know, like something to get them talking about the reviews, right? I mean, some of the reviews have talked about how expensive it is. You could talk about that.
Right.
You could say there's no ATM. You could say they don't give the right change when you can't pay at the pump, for example. These are all what the one-star reviews are saying. So you could probably raise some of these concerns and say you're considering refueling there, but you would just like to double check that maybe some of these things have been remedied since the reviews went up.
All right. Are you ready?
I'm as ready as I'll ever be, which is all I can say here.
We'll start to dial in here.
Let's do it.
Is no service at this time. Thank you for calling. Goodbye.
Oh, so that was
The number is not in service at this time, listeners.
That's unfortunate.
Well, that's disappointing.
This does link to my previous point, though, which is I just don't know how many petrol stations have or need a phone line for the consumers. I mean, I'm sure they have one for business purposes, but that one we would need to find, sadly.
Well, I think what we will need to do now, Neil, what I will do is I will file a review about their phone not working, the phone they provide to not use it.
There you go. And that's well deserved. We tried to get in touch. We couldn't. That is on them.
And then we can see if they interact with us as a result of that. So yeah, there we are. Listeners, we're gonna keep trying these because we are trying to lead an accountability revolution for mundane establishments on Google reviews.
Yeah, and if you're not willing to take a completely unscheduled phone call on a Monday or Tuesday evening, then what are you doing as a business? I mean, like, what are you even about?
I mean, I think you said it best. I would reach out to our contingent of listeners within Wales, listeners Texaco, located at 99 to 101 North Road, Mindy, Cardiff, CF143AD, United Kingdom. If you're in the neighborhood on the premises, please check in and let us know what is going on at this Texaco. And, you know, maybe provide us with a legitimate number that we could use to reach out to them.
We just want to talk. We have reasonable demands. We just want to talk.
We just want to talk. We just want to postulate, Neil. It's going to have to wait until the next episode, unless you have some parting shots for our listeners.
You always throw these to me and I never have anything prepared. So I feel like we need to find a new way to end. What I will say, though, is thanks as ever, dear listeners. I mean, that sounded ungenuine, but it was genuine. Thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in as always, for joining us on this postulatory extravaganza. We've touched on so much exciting things today, not only the world of hot dogs and sandwiches, but also the world of wishes, a controversial and philosophical world. I'm sure you'll agree. Join us next time for more fantastic postulation. We are going to do it live next time. We've committed. We have locked that in. So you'll be seeing us, not only as hearing us, but also seeing us as we postulate next time around. Looking forward to it.
Thank you, listeners. So long.